Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com.
Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 COGO. I'm Andrea Lopez Villafana, managing editor at Voice of San Diego. I'm joined as always by fellow managing editor, Andrew Keats. What's up, Andy?
Yo, how are you?
Doing good, homie. Yeah. Scott's not here, but he'll join us on the show later. Coming up on the show this week, what a week for San Diego sports, right? Opening day for the Padres' most anticipated season, SDSU makes the Final Four for the first time. And despite all of that, our sports games were no competition for the ultimate spectator sport, politics. This week, County Supervisor Nathan Fletcher announced his resignation from the Board of Supervisors. We'll recap what's happened in the last week, what we know, what we don't, and what we might expect in the future as San Diego's political scene gets shaken up. Stay with us. But first, we are in the throes of our spring fundraising campaign. You know it's spring in San Diego because the weather sucks, but the news does not. We work hard every week to bring you this podcast and to keep you up to date on big stuff like what we're covering today. This week, our team has been working hard to follow all of the news around MTS, Nathan Fletcher, and the Board of Supervisors. You can support our team by going to vosd.org/podpeople. Give any amount that's right for your budget. You'll be supporting this show. And if you give at least $35 a year or $3 a month, you'll become a Voice of San Diego member, which gets you access to the Politics Report and our live podcasts. Again, that's vosd.org/podpeople. We should mention that we're recording this podcast around 2 p.m. on a Thursday. The news has been flying fast this week, so maybe something has happened since, but be sure to keep an eye on our site for the latest. So, Nathan Fletcher, let's get into it. Sunday night, I was scrolling on Instagram when I came across a post with a lot of text. Usually, I would have scrolled past it, but I saw a couple words that caught my eye. I have been waging a struggle. Fletcher was announcing he was abandoning his run for state senate and would be entering a treatment program for post-traumatic stress and alcoholism. Instantly, you texted me, Andy, as I was reading this post. And pretty much, the news hasn't stopped since then.
Yeah, it's... It seems like it's been more than 3 full days and some change. Feels like a lot more than that.
So much has changed. So let's start on Sunday. Sunday night, this post goes up. And I would say we all were pretty surprised. And I think people within Nathan's circles were also surprised to learn that he would be dropping out of the race and that he was, you know, going through these struggles, as he called them.
Yeah. So I guess there were a couple surprises. So one, it's just, it was abrupt. And he said, I'm dropping out of the state senate race. I'm going into rehab. Mm-hmm. That was all, or treatment, I guess he said. That was all on its own, just on its face. Shocking would be major news. Right. And was. Mm-hmm. However, the way it came out seemed to pretty clearly imply that something else would be coming soon after. Mm-hmm. For one, simultaneous to his announcement was a response from his wife, Lorena Gonzalez, saying it was sort of not quite the sort of full-throated defense and support that you would imagine if all that had happened was that he had decided he had been living with trauma too long and it needed to end and he was going into treatment. There was a sort of terse nature to her response. She said, mm-hmm. I appreciate that my husband is willing to do this for the family.
Mm-hmm. And that stood out other people started also responding to his announcement and wishing him well.
Wishing him well, yeah. And his military career mm-hmm. and what he experienced there has certainly been part of the public narrative about his political career.
Right.
And his childhood life and some of the trauma he experienced has also made its way into the public realm. So people knew about that. The idea that he was going through alcohol abuse was certainly something that I had never heard discussed. Mm-hmm. The idea that certain elected officials may or may not drink too much sort of floated as a speculative attack line during campaigns or just in general when people are gossiping or rumor mongering. That happens a lot. Mm-hmm. No one had ever suggested to me that Nathan Fletcher had a drinking problem. So him saying that alcohol abuse was part of this, that was also new.
Mm-hmm. And the announcement itself, right? I think it got some gears turning like, well, if you're dealing with a struggle, is that enough to drop out of the Senate race?
That was the big thing is mm-hmm. I'm going to stay on the County Board of Supervisors, but I'm not going to continue running for state Senate. If it was, hey, I've got this this trauma, I'm taking my mental health seriously, I'm putting my family first and I'm stepping aside, none of that on its face would suggest that he needed to step aside from the state Senate race.
Mm-hmm.
If he was going to go into a 90-day program or something like that, he would certainly be back in time to still be very much the front runner in a race that is a comfortable Dem seat. He's a prominent figure who would be able to raise a lot of money, and it would have been very hard to imagine somebody emerging who would be able to take advantage of his absence right. on the campaign trail in a race that wasn't really going to be very prominent during that time anyway. So that was really the real clue that something else was coming, was why do you have to drop your state Senate race if what you've said here is all that there is?
Mm-hmm.
And then through the day Monday, there was a lot of speculation in the world of politics and the
continued support, I think, on
yeah.
Social
so
media.
We should say yeah. there was a big time like this is very brave.
Mm-hmm.
Politicians are people too.
Yeah.
It's good that you're destigmatizing mental health,
mm-hmm.
Particularly from like a veteran's perspective. There was people. Offering support as fellow Marines.
Right. And because as a supervisor, he's done a lot of work in terms of like expanding the county's both public health and mental health.
But behind the scenes, the sort of people who gossip about this thing were in full on ramped up speculation mode about what was really going on.
Chisme was flown.
And that was especially true by late Monday night. Late Tuesday night when there started to be quite a bit more smoke that mm-hmm. A story was coming or a lawsuit was coming. It would be coming that night or early in the morning,
mm-hmm.
And that there was that it was significant.
Mm-hmm.
And before that could happen, though, so this was like, everybody was talking about like it's coming, it's going to be big, and
all waiting for it.
Everyone's waiting mm-hmm. for it.
We don't know what it is at that point.
Yeah, even though there was some details were starting to trickle around that actually ended up reflecting very closely what we mm-hmm. what we would learn a day later. So then we wake up Wednesday morning before that lawsuit or press conference or news story that was going to be this revelation that everyone was expecting. Before that could happen, Nathan Fletcher's attorney, Danielle Altanius Moore, issues a statement that attempt to get out ahead of that revelation,
mm-hmm.
Announced that Nathan Fletcher had been involved in a consensual affair, what they described as a consensual affair, and that there were specific allegations that would be coming out that were not true about his relationship with somebody, and that there had been discussions between this person who's going to be making this allegation and her attorney and Nathan Fletcher and his wife, Lorena Gonzalez Fletcher, that they described as extortion, that they wanted millions of dollars to make this go away without it going public, and that, that it was not true. So they, that was basically the emphasis. Consensual affair, specific allegations, not true.
And someone's trying to get money from us.
Trying to get money from us. And very quickly after that, the lawsuit came out. First was reported by KUSI, had a copy of the lawsuit. We were able to confirm quickly that a lawsuit had been filed, but that it had not posted publicly yet. Eventually, we and other agencies were able to get the lawsuit from the attorney. And then shortly after that, it did post online and people were able to start seeing what was included in it.
So the complaint is coming from a woman named Grecia Figueroa. She's a former journalist, but at the time of the allegations that she describes in the complaint, she was working for MTS as a public relations official. At this time, Nathan Fletcher is also the chairman of the board of MTS. So while she did not report to him directly, she did have interactions with him and, you know, would be in spaces with him. I think what stands out the most to me, though, about the lawsuit itself is how different she describes the relationship to how the statement that was issued in the morning describes it, right? In the morning, the statement describes it as consensual. But as you're going through the lawsuit, she, you know, the
complaint, never describes it that way.
Yeah.
She doesn't describe it. I mean, we have seen in the past people who say there was a consensual element to this, but at a certain point it surpassed consensual. I did not consent to this behavior or that behavior, or I realize now that I was not in a position to consent, and so it was inappropriate, and I didn't like it. We have in our last decade of scandals of this nature in San Diego, seen lots of different types of relationships or unwanted encounters between officials and other people. And but this is not one of those.
No.
What is described here is very specifically a non-consensual series of encounters that she says she did not agree to.
She did not want.
Did not want.
And felt that because he was in a position of power, like high-ranking official for the agency that she worked for, she felt powerless or, you know, sense of not sure what to do with his advances.
Yeah. So she includes the way she describes the relationship is that it begins with him following her on Instagram.
Stalking her profile.
Stalking
her. While not following her, technically not, you know, following her so he wouldn't see her pictures naturally. He was somehow looking at her pictures and somehow she was notified. It's not super super clear how, but I think some people have gathered that maybe he was looking at her Instagram stories, which you could see.
That's, I mean, that
even
has
if
to
you're
be
not following
I
someone.
I don't even think it's gathered. That's the only, like, for anybody who doesn't understand how Instagram works, we should actually, I actually think this is important. We should lay this out because it's otherwise it's unclear.
Yeah.
You can't tell who's looking at a specific type of post you make on Instagram.
No.
However, if you do something called a story, which is appears in a sequential order based on when you post it for a finite amount of time, and then it disappears forever afterwards, if somebody looks at that, the person who posted it can see everybody who has looked at it. And she describes him
constantly showing up
as one of the people who's looking at her stories.
And she wasn't sure that it was him because being a public official, you assume that staff members have access to his account. And so maybe it wasn't him. So she wasn't sure at first at the beginning.
Sure. And she's, I mean, she's a public, she's a press person for an agency that he's the chair of. There would be nothing suspicious about him following her, like following the press person for an agency that out there talking about the policies that he pushes in this capacity. So that's where it starts. And then eventually she alleges that he starts DMing her on Instagram.
So it starts off around October 2021 where he is more proactive about interacting with her stories. So, you know, reacting with an emoji to a story that she's posted or voting on a poll that she posted in her story.
Yeah.
And she becomes aware of more of that interaction. Still, she doesn't know if it's him or someone from his staff.
Yeah.
And it's not until a press conference where he mentions something about her Instagram that she realizes that it was him all along.
Yes. And so that begins a, you know, a consistent DM conversation that is flirtatious.
Yes.
And as, you know, so what she says is that she concedes that these were erotic conversations.
Mm-hmm.
But she says that she mimics his erotic tone, sort of out of fear or confusion or awkwardness or whatever it is that she does it, but she wasn't into it.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that, or his lawyer says that, you know, what's included in this complaint is only one side of the conversation. So in a world where this lawsuit continues without being settled and eventually gets into discovery, or if he files his own lawsuit, which they claim at one point that they intend to do because they say that this is extortion, you know, people can say they're going to file a lawsuit all the time. We'll see if they actually do. But if this progresses, perhaps we will eventually see more conversations between them. But we haven't yet. So what we have seen is conversations that, they're flirting.
Yeah, flirting.
They're not especially sexual, frankly.
No.
They're just flirty.
Just letting, you know, there's a point where he lets her know he's home alone. His wife's out of town.
Yeah, very suggestive, clearly. He's constantly telling her that he's home alone.
And saying, and also the secret of nature comes out really early where he's asking her to delete some of their messages, delete as you go kind of thing.
I delete as I go because my staff can see these because they have
access to my account.
So, you know, encourages her to be discreet about this sort of thing. It's sort of, and it goes on like that for a while. I want to make your dreams come true this year and stuff like that.
And
it's
pursuing the idea of like meeting in secret, right? So like if people see us together, they're instantly, you know, going to be a bunch of social posts about it. There's a message where he sends her like, we have to find the right setting, like in a closet or something. And she says, ha ha ha. And then he says, I have a closet. No one would see us there. So obviously flirty.
Yeah. It's nothing left to the
and secretive. Yeah,
now,
yeah.
And we don't even have to like discern what's happening here. He says that they did in fact have a consensual affair. So there's no one who's like, no, there was nothing happening here. And so that, eventually leads to her going to his hotel room at 10:30 at night, where she says that he, made a sexual advance towards her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he tried to kiss her. They met in the stairwell of, the hotel that he was staying at that moment. His wife was out of town again, and he waited until his security guards left and his kids were put to sleep. So he met her afterwards, and while in the stairwell, they had a conversation, and then he tried to kiss her, and she felt shocked and confused, she says in her complaint. And then she left a couple hours later. The following morning, he messaged her and, you know, told her he'd like check in with her at some other point.
Yeah.
But then we get into accusations of sexual assault.
Yeah.
That also, I think it's important to note the location of where they happened.
Yes.
Given her position and his position.
Yeah. So again, she never describes a single consensual sexual encounter between them. No. Everything she describes in the complaint is an unwanted sexual encounter.
Mm-hmm.
The ones of those that most leap out of the complaint are ones that occurred at MTS headquarters that were, you know, arranged essentially while Nathan Fletcher was sitting at the dais of the board for the Metropolitan Transit System, of which he was the chairperson. So basically she says that he starts texting her from the dais. He's looking at her. He tells
messaging her on Instagram
and tells her to come to sort of like a side conference room or side meeting room off of the main area where meetings are held. And she does. And once in there, he makes a aggressive sexual advance again that she does not want.
Yes, he kissed her. This was June 9th, 2022, according to her complaint. He kissed her in this conference room adjacent from where the meeting was held that they were previously in. Mm-hmm. And began to grab her breasts through her clothes. She says she pushed him off. She didn't feel comfortable with this type of encounter, especially in MTS headquarters, while her coworkers and managers were immediately outside the door. He assured her that, quote, no one will bother us in here, unquote. And she felt shocked and uncomfortable, she says, and she left the room shortly after.
And then there's another encounter, much like that one, also begins with messages from him sitting at the chair position during a meeting. Mm-hmm. Again, messages her to again go to a side meeting conference room, and again makes an aggressive sexual advance that she does not want.
Right. This time, she describes it, as a sexual assault. He grabs her breasts underneath her blouse, starts pulling some of her clothes, exposing her breasts, and just forcibly touching her.
Yeah. Now, so certainly there's a lot to unpack here. But first things first, what she's describing there is a crime. Mm-hmm.
In MTS headquarters.
Headquarters from the chairman of the MTS board against an MTS employee. She's alleging what she's described there, if accurate, is a crime. Mm-hmm. It's a criminal offense, not just this is a civil complaint, but there would presumably be some follow-up from SDPD, Sheriff's Department, City Attorney's Office, District Attorney's Office, potentially, into those allegations. Not that they would be easy to charge, but certainly you would want to look into them. Mm-hmm. There's also something else she describes during these encounters, which is the implication that other people besides her and Nathan Fletcher had been clued in to what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I will venture to say that this is the part of the complaint that is thinnest in the substance of the allegations. She suggests that she got the impression that San Diego City Council President Shawnee Lo Rivera, who is also on the MTS board, and Sharon Cooney, who is the CEO of MTS, both could have known what was going on. The support for this is that they were sitting near enough to him that they may have been able to see what he was texting, which, I mean, I guess is true, but one might also say they may not have been able to see what he was texting, or he may have shielded the phone, or they may not have been looking, or they did, it's just not, there's just not much meat on that bone, as far as I can tell.
Well, she describes Fletcher looking at her.
Yes, looking at her from the meeting.
As he's messaging her from the meeting and, kind of like little smirks and little moments that she felt were noticed by those around them.
Yeah, and specifically she says that she thinks they were noticed by Mark Olson. Mark Olson was was her boss. He was in charge of the media department at MTS, or the PR department, I should say, at MTS. So, and she says that Mark Olson, that is, gave her a look that indicated he recognized what was going on and didn't approve. Now, as I say, there's a lot of speculation in those allegations, and there's no concrete support offered in the complaint. Mm-hmm. And in a complaint, to be clear, is like where you get your opportunity to lay out what you have, the best available evidence you have for this. And these are sort of speculative assertions that lack significant support in that. But they're clearly there because she's trying to demonstrate that other people knew what was going on, which is important because of what happens next.
Right.
What happens next is that she gets fired.
She got fired last month, February 6, 2023.
Mm-hmm.
This, according to her complaint, happens to align with when Fletcher announced his official candidacy for the seat of California State Senate.
Yeah, the very day.
The
very day. And so she gets fired. And now, so I just said that I didn't think what's in the complaint is especially strong in terms of establishing that other board members or the CEO of MTS or her boss was aware of this situation going on with her and Nathan, which is not to say that they didn't know. It's just that what's offered in that complaint is, I would say, fairly weak. But that doesn't mean that that information couldn't have been conveyed from Nathan to those people by another way, or that he could have told them to fire her without them knowing what had happened, right? I mean, I have no idea, but it's none of that is in the complaint specifically.
Right.
What is in the complaint is that she was fired on the day that he announced his state Senate bid last month.
Mm-hmm. And she says she received no warning and had no opportunity to speak with her supervisor or anyone at MTS because she was required to immediately leave and gather her personal belongings and leave.
Okay. So this obviously is now a very significant set of accusations already.
Mm-hmm.
Fletcher has before the complaint is posted online, he comes out and says that that this is an extortion attempt from following a consensual affair.
Mm-hmm.
What she goes on to describe, though, is what happens in the month since then,
right?
Since her firing, which is that she engages with Nathan Fletcher and his wife, Lorena Gonzalez, or she and her lawyer, I should say, and attempts to come to a settlement to put the issue to bed without going public.
Mm-hmm.
And that was happening all the way up until Sunday afternoon. It was right up until just a few hours later when we all begin this.
Mm-hmm. He's dropping out of the race.
Events, and, yeah. Right up until that afternoon, Fletcher's lawyers, according to this complaint, convey to Figueroa that they intend to sue her
mm-hmm.
for extortion if she files a civil suit against him.
Right.
Saying, do not do this or we will file a civil suit.
Not only that,
yeah.
They also say something else.
Yes. And when we say they here, I want to be specific mm-hmm. because we're talking, I think we're talking about two people. It is worded a little bit strangely, but that Lorena Gonzalez and Nathan Fletcher both say, we will sue you if mm-hmm. you file a civil suit. And they stated they would make her, quote, look terrible, and it's going to follow her for the rest of her life,
mm-hmm.
Which she perceives as a threat.
Right.
So I am interested in unwinding the sentence where that threat is explained in the complaint says they.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Nathan Fletcher said this. I don't know if Lorena Gonzalez said this. Nathan Fletcher has resigned. Lorena Gonzalez has not, and she is still in a very powerful position in the state of California. And so this continues to be an allegation about what she did. Mm-hmm. Now, Lorena Gonzalez has since maintained the idea that these are false allegations. She mm-hmm. said that on Twitter last night. So she is not backing away from the position that Nathan Fletcher has offered in his own defense, which is this was a consensual affair and everything since then is not true.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, we do have an allegation here of threats being issued to keep her from filing a civil suit that, according to the complaint, was made by both Lorena Gonzalez and Nathan Fletcher.
Mm-hmm. And going back to on Wednesday when the lawsuit drops, mm-hmm. We had already known he had dropped out of the Senate race, but you also found something out.
I forgot about that. Wow,
we're going through
chronologically. Yeah, so I actually found this out Tuesday night. I'm sure other people did too, because mm-hmm. like I said, everybody was talking about all this stuff. We were able to confirm Wednesday morning that Nathan Fletcher had, although he initially says, I'm dropping out of the state Senate, but I'm staying in the county supervisor mm-hmm. role. I'll be back in when I complete my treatment. But he on Tuesday resigned his position on the MTS. Board
mm-hmm.
Where he is the chairman. So he steps away from that.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, before we knew that it was an MTS employee mm-hmm. who was offering these allegations, it was the question was, well, how exactly is it that you think you're in a mental state that you'll be able to continue to be on the county board of supervisors, but not the Metropolitan Transportation System.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was answered quickly when we realized, well, it was from this agency that the allegations arose.
Mm-hmm.
So he drops off out of MTS. eventually MTS confirms that the vice chair at MTS, Stephen Whitburn, Councilman Stephen Whitburn, has stepped into an acting chair role, which is what he will be until the board follows the bylaws and elects a new chair, which requires a 2/3 vote of the board. Mm-hmm. So yes, we have all that on Wednesday afternoon, right?
And then Wednesday afternoon as well.
Yes.
There's some other resignations that start coming in.
Yes, yes, yes. So then we're able to confirm that his director of policy, Emily Weir, mm-hmm. Resigned Wednesday afternoon from her job, received an email sent to staff members saying that she would no longer work there. Another senior policy advisor had also resigned from that position. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is consistent with anybody who was around 10 years ago when Bob Filner was accused of sexual misconduct and attempted to stay in the mayor's office. One of the things that really started to weigh down his attempt to do so was when staff started resigning at a rapid fire clip. And, mm-hmm. you know, the people who were sticking around were getting promoted, promoted beyond what they had in what positions they had been in before. It was, a really bare bones staff. And that became one of the things that's, you know, it's hard to stick around if you don't have an office, mm-hmm. and especially if you're not even going to be there because you're going to be in treatment. Yeah, by late Wednesday afternoon, there had been two other staffers mm-hmm. had two staffers from his office had resigned. Mm-hmm. We've had this lawsuit all day, and then very late Wednesday, at 10:30, in the evening, Nathan Fletcher gets back on Twitter and announces that the strain of all of this is too much. Mm-hmm. He maintains still that these are false allegations against him. Yet he is not going to continue to put his family through this, and he resigns. However, we then find out Thursday morning that he will not be resigning today mm-hmm. or yesterday or tomorrow, but on May 15th.
Yes.
On May 15th. So Nathan Fletcher will continue to enter treatment, he says. Mm-hmm. He will still be the supervisor for District 4 of mm-hmm. San Diego County until May 15th, although he will not be present in the County Board of Supervisors until then. And so just for the sake of putting a tidy bit on that, at his salary, prorated by the day, those 46 days that he'll continue to be in office will be worth to him about $25,000. Which is before we get to cashing in whatever leave time he has and the medical insurance that he would potentially be using for that treatment. So we're looking at least $25,000 that it would be worth to him to resign effective May 15th as opposed to on March 30th. Now, $25,000 is a teeny, tiny, teeny, tiny amount of money for the San Diego County budget. Mm-hmm. Not even a rounding error. Basically none, but it's $25,000 for him. And yeah. He's not a wealthy individual, and certainly you can see the incentive of if you can get away with saying, I'm going to resign, let's stop this circus, I'm gone. By the way, I'll be gone on May 15th. Mm-hmm. That's worth $25,000 to him, mm-hmm. The difference between leaving today and leaving then. Yeah. So there it is.
So I think now at this point, even though, you know, we started off Sunday kind of like with this, you know, message we weren't expecting, statement we weren't expecting. And then through the days afterwards, all these rumors and then finding out about the lawsuit and just like really, really taking in what the lawsuit is alleging. I think now we're left with a lot of questions of what happens next. Who knew what? Why was she fired? What does this mean for MTS?
Yeah. So that, I mean, we can get in, we can call our friend Scotty to start weighing
our
in on some of
special guest.
But I think we should be very clear that Nathan Fletcher resigning ends some part of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it does not end anything for the Metropolitan Transit System.
Not at all.
The complaint, as it exists here, alleges a crime that occurred on their property by the leader of that organization against an employee, and that she was later fired and she says it's because of that. Mm-hmm. If that is true, it is a massive scandal. If that is 80% true, it's still a scandal. Like, mm-hmm. understanding exactly who knew what and when and why they did the things that they did is absolutely of ongoing public significance and does not go away by Nathan Fletcher's resignation at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as we said, there's the allegation that a threat was offered by the most powerful labor leader in California against her. And that, too, deserves some clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk to our friend Scott Lewis. I can't believe that he had a vacation scheduled for this week, but he has insisted upon pausing that vacation, stepping away from his family in order to share his views on this situation.
We love him for that.
Well,
we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, we'll call Scott. Stay with us.
Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact on the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover Seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com.
Hey, Scott.
Hey.
Andy, say hi to Scott.
Don't Scotty! Sorry, it's because we just talked.
What's up, guys? I'm glad that you let me still come on. I appreciate it.
Yes. So what do you think, Scott? What questions do you have?
Well, as a matter of fact, I have some things to say.
Surprise. Shocker.
I think there's like three sort of main points I want to go over. The first is...
He's got talking points for us, Andrea.
The first is this major question I think you just left with, which is that, you know, what happened? Was there a sexual assault? Is it being criminally investigated? Was it on MTS property? And, you know, what actually happened that, you know, this the victim, if there is one, needs justice and the accountability needs to spread on that question in particular. Obviously, if she was hurt, you know, that's terrible, and there needs to be some accountability. And so I think that's the major question. Obviously, we can't get to that answer anytime soon. Hopefully, there's some clarity, but it's, you know, obviously, it's often very hard in these situations. So I think that's the first one I'm left with.
Okay.
I think the second question then is related, but this is the big one for me right now, which is MTS. I think the Fletcher part of the story is, you know, beyond that main mystery, is sort of resolving itself rather astonishingly rapidly, right? Like, it is getting, I haven't seen a meltdown of all the meltdowns we've watched, from Duncan Hunter to Kevin Beiser to Bob Filner to all of these people we've seen, you know, fall from grace because of some level of impropriety or crime or violence. It's never been this fast, but He's just going through all the steps so fast. And I think then the scandal really now, though, is at MTS, right? Like, the accusation is that after she told Fletcher that she no longer or did not want to have a romantic relationship with him, that within weeks she was fired and offered no explanation. And, you know, I think that that's just as bad as it gets as far as like straight up sexual harassment and then retaliation that we all learn about when we do our trainings. Like this is as, you know, the accusation is that it's as cut and dry and horrid as possible, which means that I think it's incumbent on MTS as soon as possible to try to provide whatever level of explanation they can, clarity they can, about what happened and why they fired this woman. And I don't know, you know, what they can provide, but they need to do something quick because it seems to me that the blast radius of this scandal is going to start to get and reach the executives at MTS. And I would not be surprised within several weeks, unless they provide some clarity that makes sense about why she was fired, if the consequences and job losses also affect people in those areas, because that's as bad as it could possibly get. And so that's my second main question.
So on that point, Nathan Fletcher's defense seems to be that she did not report to him, that he was not her boss, that this was not an inappropriate relationship because he did not control her career. Now, maybe that holds up as for him in court. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I think as a matter of like whether this is a relationship that could be considered consensual and, you know, therefore not a big deal if not for all of the other allegations. I think his role as the chair of the agency puts that obviously into some question. But it's true that I would say as a board chair, he doesn't have the authority to just fire a junior staffer. Mm-hmm. Somebody else would have to do that. And so to your point, Scott, yeah, I mean, if there's any truth to the fact that she was fired because of this, that didn't happen just between her and Nathan Fletcher. Other people were involved with that.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I would put a little twist on what you said. I think that he offered that defense that he wasn't in charge directly of her as a defense, not of the relationship's propriety, but of the fact that he could not have retaliated against her and caused her firing. And I would say sort of two things. As the board chair, yeah, the board chair doesn't have direct authority to fire anybody. But the board chair is the board chair and has enormous ability to affect the circumstances that the executives of the agency work under. And if he wants something to be done, he can make it happen through sort of secondary pressures, right? Like, well, yeah, you want this project done, you know, I'm going to, you know, X leverage I might employ here or there. Like and I think that the power dynamic plays in very importantly there. Like she's very well aware that he is in a position of authority over the people who are in a position of authority over her.
Yeah.
And that to me, I think indicates there's just no possibility of a truly consensual experience between the two. And without like going through some pretty significant disclosure, transparency and kind of HR things to make sure it's a stand-up relationship, not sneaking away and pawing at her in the conference room.
Yeah, I would also add that, like, and I don't know if what I'm going to say would have any legal significance. I would guess probably not. But just in case anybody's not aware about how this position that she was in works, this is not something that's like, you know, totally isolated from the board. This isn't like Nathan Fletcher walking through an office floor at MTS headquarters and seeing a transit planner in a cubicle and starting up a relationship. A PR person like in a position like she held would be dealing with public officials who are on the board in their official capacity often at press conferences, preparing talking points, mm-hmm. talking to them to build press releases and arranging press interviews. Like the number of times that I've been in a gaggle of three people, one of whom was a board member at an agency like Sandagger MTS, and the other one was a press person at that same agency, is many. It is a common relationship. She would have direct intervention with Nathan Fletcher by the very nature of her job, and that is not true about like an accountant or something.
And I think we both had the same reaction because, like, okay, so she's fired, and you can fire. Usually people in positions like that aren't part of the unionized workforce. It's an at-will relationship. You can make changes more easily. But I think that it's just really, really incumbent on them to be as transparent as possible. And they're like, I saw a note yesterday that they were doing an investigation. You don't need to do an investigation. Why did you fire the woman? You have that there. You can look and see if that passes the smell test.
Yeah.
That's something you had to go through a process to decide whether it was a budget cut or, you know, whatever concern you had about her or performance reviews that led up to it. It's very hard to fire even at will employees in this state because you need to line up that, you know, that either A, you're dealing with budget problems and you can eliminate their position, which I don't think happened here, or you're dealing with, you know, somebody that you've talked to and it's just not working out. And you have, you know, months and months of paperwork built up to that. They either have that or don't. They know right now. They don't need to do an investigation. They know right now what happened, why they fired her. And I think people deserve to get whatever level of clarity they can from this agency about why that happened. And if it looks anything suspect or thin, then people are going to lose their jobs at that agency and need to really rapidly. And I think it's a very, very serious scandal that they're now dealing with. It's so incredible how big of a blast radius this scandal has. It's going to affect politics in so many different ways, and it's going to affect MTS in so many different ways, and it's going to affect budgets in so many different ways. I mean, this could be millions of dollars. And I think it's really a kind of scary thing, I think, for this agency to deal with, but they need to be upfront about it as soon as possible.
Boy, can you imagine how unlucky that public agency is if it's the case that they merely fired her for underperformance and it happened to be the one employee who they were firing for underperformance who totally unbeknownst to them had been sexually assaulted by a board member who on the very day of her dismissal launched a state Senate campaign. I mean, just an astounding run of bad luck for the people at Metropolitan Transportation System, if that is the case.
Yeah. That's so well put. I mean, okay. So everything lines up that's just happens to be the coincidence. Yeah. I mean, one of the things we talked about is just how many years we watch some of these agencies keep employees that are obviously not doing that great of a job. I mean, it's for them to take an action to, you know, cut somebody out for some sort of performance issue is itself rare enough that it's like, it's strains credulity they took an effort to improve the quality of their you know, their workforce in this particular moment, right, as this was happening.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be different if they're like, yeah, look, for the past, you know, X amount of years, she's, you know,
underperformance on all of her thing. Yeah.
And we had, you know, situations with, I don't know, press releases or, you know, copyright. I don't know, something that you'd be like, oh, okay. But
yeah,
they're not pointing to anything.
I mean, almost like it almost has to be abusive itself. Like it almost has to be, I don't know what they're going to be able to show. And that's why this is just such a huge scandal. And that brings me to like the third part of this scandal, which is just really enormous. And I think a little bit undiscussed because it's awkward and uncomfortable. And that is that another victim in this situation is probably one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful woman in California, Lorena Gonzalez. She's she is in such a bad situation on so many fronts because, you know, her, as her first comments have been that she defends him and believes that these are untrue accusations. She's going to feel a tremendous pressure to besmirch and challenge this woman's credibility and accusations. But on the other hand, she's going to have some really difficult decisions that she had no reason to have to deal with. And I think it's to watch how she deals with this and how she gets through it is going to be really important because she has been such a public leader. And I think it's a little bit under discussed how much she is going to suffer from this as well, and through no fault, from what I can tell, of her own.
Well, there's the accusation that she was an active participant in threatening this woman if she followed through with filing a civil suit.
Right, correct. And I think that's the part to watch. You know, I think she's going to have some really difficult choices to make about where she draws the line of what she continues to do to defend him and to join with him as he discredits this woman or not. And then as we watch, if there's other accusations that emerge, how she's going to handle those. And then just the enormous sort of like reckoning that they're going to have to go through. This is, I was looking back at some of her posts and New Year's Eve, his birthday, their wedding anniversary. She tweets about what a devoted and wonderful husband he's been, how great he is and how handsome he is. And then the evidence in that filing in that lawsuit was that night he was texting and DMing the woman about how she, not his wife, was his amour. You know, it's just a really jarring, reckoning with different realities and deception that is going to, I think, have lasting impacts on her, which means it's going to have lasting impacts on San Diego and California politics.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that and you alluded to this, I do think that as we unspool what MTS knew and when and what they did, are questions that will also have to be answered by Lorena Gonzalez. She, if there is evidence that she and not just her husband actually actively threatened this person for filing a civil suit, then, that would be a significant revelation about her ability to continue doing her job in the public space.
I think lastly, the thing is, how many of these are we going to see? It's almost getting the point of which men in power have not done this stuff, I mean, there's Kevin Beiser on the school board that just left the school board. There was, Duncan Hunter went through his stuff. Bob Filner went through his stuff. The Mickey Kasparian, one of the most powerful labor leaders San Diego's ever had, went through this and fell. The numbers are getting overwhelming, and it's like, obviously there's a lot of good people involved in politics, but the level of deception and just, how many of these scandals we see is getting a little bit absurd. And I think the other point too is he really manipulated people's feelings about mental health issues these days. There are a lot of people who are trying to rally confidence and people's ability to speak about mental health challenges, to own them like they would any injury or any sort of challenge that they're facing, that it's okay to be open about them. It's okay to go seek help and take time out for them. And he manipulated that at the beginning with this announcement, and then and let people, dozens and dozens of prominent people in San Diego, sort of rally to his side about it. And only to then a couple of days later reveal that actually he's facing, one of the most serious allegations anyone in a position of power can face. And that's, what led to these decisions and the treatment. I don't doubt that he needs treatment and he suffers from these things, but that is just that sort of scar of deception and manipulation is going to last, that's a thing that's going to last every time somebody says something similar you know, it's going to come with concern, you know, it's going to come with suspicion.
Yeah. And to put a point on why it was so manipulative, at the time that he said what he said, which elicited a number of people, elected and political professionals, supporters, et cetera, to come out and say, this is very brave of you to put your mental illness, your mental health front and center, to be willing to talk about it, to destigmatize these issues, whether they were veterans who were praising it because of PTSD, or people who have gone through recovery who were praising it because of what he said about alcohol abuse, or people who just generally stood for the importance of taking care of one's mental health. At the time he said that, he knew that he had had, in his words, a consensual affair, and that that's what was going on. The order of events makes clear that that statement came just a few hours after there were discussions going on between him and Ms. Figueroa about this situation, which he says is a consensual affair, and she says was not. But he left that out of the statement. He didn't go full David Letterman. You know, David Letterman in this situation went out on TV and said, I had an affair and I'm ashamed about that, but I'm now being extorted and I'm dealing with this by telling you that I did something that was wrong, but I did not do anything else, and this person's mm-hmm. trying to take money from me. He, from best I can tell, attempted to call her bluff. Attempted to see if getting out in front of it would keep her from filing the civil suit, and used PTSD and mental health as a shield in that bluff attempt. I mean, there's nothing that would be keeping him from saying in that initial statement, I'm going to treatment. I was dealing with this issue from childhood, from my military career. It's developed into an alcohol dependency, and that led me to cheat on my wife, and we are working through that, but that's why I'm going to treatment. But he didn't say that. He left that out and allowed people to jump to his defense, not knowing that that information was coming.
Yeah, I think it's just, it's really upsetting. The whole thing is really upsetting, I think, especially to people who support it, because it did feel like you were being yanked around, like you were using, you know, something that causes a lot of sympathy to actually just sort of like snow in that. And I mean, look back on his entire career. He's been very calculated in how he lets information out and how he tries to package it or blunt it. Like when he softly revealed that he had a son from a previous relationship that he hadn't been a part of, you know, raising, and now he was suddenly on the scene to, you know, all the different steps that have come leading up to this. And it just, it's at some point you have to wonder, like, how much, I'm sure some of his supporters have to wonder how much they can publicly defend before they need to wait, you know, and just see what happens. But that's also back to the point, like, he's done. I mean, there's not much more left to do other than he's got six more weeks that he's managed that he's going to try to manage to stay in the office for. And so now the scandal is just how other people deal with what he did. And it could be, you know, super consequential, if not life altering for them.
Man, one thing I'll say, you know, just you staying through, you being here from the Filner scandal, the Beiser scandal went through this. What a collective sigh of relief other elected officials must be sighing right now that they don't have to go through weeks of being asked with each new revelation whether they think he should resign, whether they stand by him, etc. I mean, he made the announcement ultimately before any other local official in town had to say, after seeing the complaint, whether he should resign. Not one that I have seen, not one local elected Democrat weighed in yesterday to say that he should resign, or that they continued to stand by him up mm-hmm. until his announcement.
Yeah, it is interesting that he spared him that, and it also shows how severe it is. That, you know, it also reveals how much of a lack of confidence they have in their ability to demonstrate that this was a consensual and acceptable experience. And I think the
it also highlights
what they're not talking about, which is, I think, they need to be demanding accountability at MTS. Sean Elos Rivera is the only one I've seen who has articulated well that this was an inappropriate situation for this employee to be in, no matter what level of consent there was.
Right.
And I think that now Todd Gloria is on the board of the, he's the mayor of San Diego. He's on the board of MTS, correct? You know, mm-hmm. where is he in helping us get accountability at MTS? Where's Nora Vargas or whoever's going to represent the county on the MTS board?
She did release a statement saying that she supported his resignation.
Supported his resignation from the board, but she hasn't mentioned MTS, right?
Oh, about what to do with about MTS. Yes, no. Sorry, I thought the idea of supporting one's resignation was naturally a fun, like, what is the alternative? What?
yeah, exactly. Like, good job. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that he's let us off the hook of having to deal with that. And so that's just, you know, MTS's future is the big scandal, I think, right now. And I think as we go through, we're going to have to really grapple too with what the Board of Supervisors do now. Do they appoint somebody for that position? Do they hold a special election? They're two Democrats, two Republicans. Could they come to an agreement on a candidate that they can appoint? Do they force through a special election? When does that occur? And how does that affect the balance of power on the Board of Supervisors, which has gone through, led by Nathan himself? I mean, I think part of the story is, part of what made him an effective politician is also what makes him kind of an impulsive, person who takes this sort of risk. It's a really interesting character study. I'm sure somebody eventually could do about it. But he has overseen a massive transformation in how the county runs and how it looks and what kind of issues it prioritizes. And now that's all in question. There's a lot of people who would love to have Republicans lead the county again, and they now have an opening unlike anything they've had before. Tara Lawson Reamer is probably going to face a pretty significant challenge, and whoever gets appointed to this role, especially if they're a compromise candidate, could also change the balance pretty significantly. So, the blast radius of this scandal is really hard to contemplate because it's so wide. There's so many implications in so many areas.
Just some practical details here. So the Board of Supervisors has 30 days after a resignation to schedule a special election, and the special
election is after the seat is declared vacant, right?
After the seat is declared vacant. So in this case, that would be, you know, May 15th or I guess May 16th potentially. They then have 30 days from that day to announce a special election, and then that special election must occur in 90 days. So that puts it, that means that vote, if it were to happen, would have to happen prior to the March primary next year. They can't, I don't believe, unless there's some other exception that I have not found, that would allow them to consolidate it with the primary that's already going to happen. Sometimes you can do that to save money.
Right.
But I don't think that timeline would work. But all of that is contingent upon whether or not they can first find a suitable appointee, which would obviate the entire issue.
Right. But also, like, this isn't, he wouldn't be primary. He wouldn't be having to deal with a primary this year, right? So
no.
He just got reelected. So his term is a pretty sweet one for somebody to get into. They'd have, you know, a little over 2 years to keep going in his term. And then I'm not sure the implications, if that counts as a full term for the consideration of term limits.
Oh, right.
I think it probably does if it's over 2 years, but if it hits that line, then it might be under 2 years, which would allow that person to have two more terms after that. And so those are all things to look out for as well.
All right, Scott, should we let you go back to your family?
Yes, thanks for letting me on.
Have fun, Scott.
All right.
Thanks, Scott. All right.
Thanks for joining
us. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast in San Diego. Don't forget about that link, vosd.org/podpeople. If you've never donated to Voice of San Diego, we promise it's worth it. You'll support truly independent and authoritative local journalism. Again, that's vosd.org/podpeople. I'm Andrea Lopez Villafana, managing editor at Voice of San Diego. Andrew Keats is also managing editor. Scott Lewis is our CEO and editor-in-chief. Nate John is our producer. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.